Brainwaves, hear the world differently, bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Just a bit of a content warning for today's show. We'll be discussing suicide, suicidal ideation, sexual assault and abuse. So if that type of discussion might not be good for you today, it might be worth tuning out for the next half an hour. Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital Radio, and online at 3cr.org.au. I'm Mark, and today we're joined by artist Amelia McSherry, who'll be chatting to us today about their upcoming performance piece titled I Want to Die, But Not at the Hands of a Man, and what inspired them to conceive the project. Hello, Amelia, and thank you for joining us on Brainwaves this evening.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
So to get things started, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and share a bit about your art practice, how long you've been creating, and how you first got involved in the arts?
Of course. So as you said, my name is Amelia McSherry. I'm a visual and performance artist. I live in Nam. I'm 26 years old. I've been creating art my whole life. I think I've been very blessed by being born into a family with very creative but also very nurturing parents who've always allowed me to practice, try new things, ceramics, music, painting, drawing. But on my own personal journey as a solo artist, I think I've really been dedicated to this practice for the last 2.5 years. I feel like that's when I've been intensely honed in on it.
Before you got into the arts, how were you expressing yourself creatively before that?
My dad is a musician. So as a kid and as an adult, he's always playing music, playing guitar. We used to sing together. My mom, she paints, she sculpts, she does everything. So I feel like my whole life, creating works that are really meaningful to me, but then also journaling, if that's an art form, which in my mind it is. But yeah, always writing everything down about my life and documenting things and keeping things. Yeah.
Your work spans both visual and performance art. How do these two sides of your practice connect or complement each other?
So with this specific exhibition, my visual pieces and my performance pieces are really, really interconnected. Even though I am using quite a few different mediums, there's kind of a color theme, but then also the fact that they're all deeply reflecting my experiences as a human being, my experiences as a woman, and my experiences as a survivor of domestic abuse and violence at the hands of a man or more than one man throughout my life.
And you're described as a queer disabled artist. Could you share a bit about what that means for you personally and creatively?
Yeah, of course. I think that as an artist or as a human being, there are all these different identifiers that we have, like we have to choose, either relate or label ourselves. And I think that for me personally, I do often find them reductive. But I also believe that it allows people from other marginalized backgrounds oftentimes to connect with an artist. And I feel like the fact that I'm queer and the fact that I'm disabled are really intrinsically connected to the work that I create, alongside the fact that I am assigned female at birth and have lived experiences as a woman. My disability, especially, I have a diagnosis of I'm living with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a rare genetic disorder that can cause a lot of pain. And I think that I like to share that I have that specific disability because when I meet someone and I find out that they have the same disability, we both get really excited because, it's rare. But then also, I think that anyone who is living with a chronic illness understands that there may be periods of time where you're bedridden. I spent, I still on and off spend days in bed, but before I had a diagnosis, there was a period of time where I spent almost 2 years in bed and I was still creating art the entire time. So I feel like that's very relevant to what I make, what I create, and who I am.
Can you walk us through some of your past work, both visual pieces and performances, and what subjects they explored?
Of course. In terms of visual works, I have explored so many different mediums. I love making art for myself and also for my friends. So I like to sew. I love making ceramics. I love to paint, although I'm not a very skilled, technically trained painter, but I still love to paint, especially abstract works. And then performance pieces has been something that I've really just started exploring and publicly performing the last 2 years. The last performance piece that I did for a larger audience was it's also drawing on the same themes of abuse and self-discovery, self-destruction. I was pulling all these teeth from all these crevices. So it started with me entering the room completely naked and then putting on a wedding dress and then pulling out all of these teeth from all my pockets, from crevices in my body, from inside my vagina, scavenging the room. And earlier on in the night, I'd planted teeth in people's bags or in their hands. So I was retrieving them from all over the place, like this mad kind of dream. And then it ended with me pulling teeth from inside of my mouth and kind of letting a liquid, like a dark liquid, out of my mouth. Sounds very graphic and scary, but at the time, I feel like it was actually a lot more lighthearted than it sounds. It was kind of silly. It was really fun. And I'm really excited with performing performance pieces that have deep meaning to myself and anyone who wants to connect with them, but then also might be viewed as a little silly or absurd by people who don't necessarily want to connect with them. And that's okay too.
You have an endurance piece coming up in April titled I Want to Die, But Not at the Hands of a Man. Before we talk about that specifically, could you explain what an endurance piece is for listeners who might not be familiar with the term?
Definitely. So the most well-known performance artist who I'm sure you've heard of, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have probably heard of, is Marina Abramović. She's a Serbian artist. She does a lot of work that explores the relationship between her body and others, her mind, like limitations of the body, and also the body, the female body as an object. One of her works, she sat in a room for 8 hours a day and she did it for 3 months. And so that was an endurance piece because it's often using your body or your mind in this kind of demanding or repetitive manner over like a very long duration of time. So yeah, that's an endurance piece. And my endurance piece is not going to be that long. So the total time of her piece over all those months was 750 hours and mine will be 4 hours. So nothing like that, but still I'm really excited.
Now, focusing on your upcoming piece, can you share some of the background behind it? What inspired its creation?
100%. So with this, just prefacing before that this will be like a little more intense, so I might need to say it more than once, but I'm going to try my best. Okay, so to answer that question, this performance piece and all these visual pieces were inspired by a romantic relationship that I left almost like almost exactly 2 years ago, where I experienced domestic violence. And it really changed the entire trajectory of my life in so many ways. And I felt like it totally turned my world around in a really negative and really horrible way. I felt like I still feel like I'm an incredibly trusting person, but my outlook on the world has shifted. And I'm sure that any survivors of domestic abuse can totally relate to this feeling. I have experienced violence from men in many different ways throughout my entire life. Although this was the first time where I felt like it kind of ticked these boxes and I followed these more concrete steps. I went to court. I got an intervention order. I told my friends and my family. It was well known, kind of, because I had to explain to people what was going on. Why is there this sudden shift where I'm not with this person anymore? And I think it prompted this really deep reflection and understanding that unless someone has experienced domestic violence, they're not going to understand, no matter how hard you try to explain to them. But I also feel that in another way, myself being raised, being assigned as a female at birth, being raised as a woman, I have experienced violence at the hands of men throughout my entire life. And I do believe that it's somewhat inescapable, even if you aren't a victim or a survivor of physical or mental or emotional abuse, you are going to experience violence at the hands of the patriarchy.
What was it like taking those steps for you as a victim survivor of domestic abuse? What was that process like?
The process of going to court was horrific and it was incredibly difficult. And I was pursuing what I felt like was the safest and easiest route, which was not pressing any criminal charges, just going for an intervention order. And even though I was suggested, I was in contact with the authorities who suggested that I do pursue criminal charges to keep myself safe and also for the sake of, anyone in the future in the community, just going to the process of going through court, having to see this person again. It was just too traumatic that I decided I would rather just get this intervention order. And it's really horrible that it's like that. I wish that there were so many more practices in place so that victims and survivors didn't have to kind of be re-traumatized by the system, like be having to face this person again in order to see any kind of justice. I find it insane, honestly. And also, like, you can, I don't know, it's a lot, but it was a bad experience overall. But I'm really thankful that I went through with it nonetheless, just to get the intervention order.
So the work explores the intersection of violence and mental illness. What does that intersection mean to you?
Excellent question. I personally feel like I have been on this journey with mental health issues for quite a long time now. I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety when I was 15 years old. I'm 26 years old now, so it's been over 10 years. And I feel like you can see it in the title being I Want to Die, But Not at the Hands of a Man. Anyone who has experienced suicidal ideation or self-harm had these inescapable thoughts that sometimes you don't even want to think that you want to die. And you might be thinking about killing yourself, but coming face to face with someone who is aggressive and abusive and violent and potentially stronger than you and wanting to hurt you, a part of you comes to life that you might not have seen before. And I felt like for myself, this intense vulnerability and not necessarily a shame, but it was almost a duty to protect myself. I kind of realized for the first time that this death, the idea of dying and killing myself that had been looming and I'd been thinking about on and off for such a long time, it had become a reality that maybe you're going to get what you wanted, but you're not going to be the one to do it. And although I am really happy to say that I don't want to die right now, that title kind of came to me because I thought, I've wanted this for so long, and if I'm going to get it, then I'm going to be the one doing it myself. I'm not going to let someone else take that from me, which is really dark and really twisted, but also really real.
You've said every part of myself is on display in this exhibition, artistically, emotionally, and physically. How will audiences experience or interact with these different aspects of yourself?
So, yeah, every part of myself is quite literally on display. The performance piece involves me being completely naked in a glass box. And although like my nipples and my vagina are obscured, so if anyone's uncomfortable with total graphic nudity, you're still welcome in the space. Not everything is on display, but I am completely naked. So in a literal sense. And then also my visual works include parts of my physical self, my hair, my skin, even some of my blood. Another part of me that's on display emotionally is a plinth behind the performance piece, which has a book that's my diary from the last 3 years. So I'm inviting audience members to interact with myself or my work or my diary. The only thing that I believe may be like genuinely triggering for anyone sensitive to these topics would be the diary. So if someone wanted to visit the exhibition and interact with other elements, they could totally avoid that. But then that is also an opportunity for people to understand all the deepest, darkest, but then also all the happiest, brightest moments of my life and read all my thoughts. And hopefully really interesting and hopefully exciting for audience members, because it's also an opportunity to interact with my journal whilst I'm in the room, which I feel like will potentially also be strange and uncomfortable, but also, yeah, a rare opportunity. I haven't heard of someone do that before. So if I don't know, because obviously I'm making this and I'm biased, but if I was someone attending that, I would be so excited. I wish I could read other people's diaries, but no.
People often talk about recovery as healing, but you describe yours as liberation. To you, what's the difference between those two ideas?
Great question. I think that you're totally correct that recovery is healing, but I find, or I have found, that this journey for me has been extremely liberating, especially because of the aspect of emotional abuse, that kind of controlling behavior that I experienced. So there were so many things that I loved doing that this partner at the time was really controlling about and didn't want me to do. So I feel like even this exhibition is something that would have been like tumultuous, like I couldn't, it's something that I never ever could have done for so many reasons, one of which is that I am a life model. I love life modeling, which is, you know, where you stand in a room naked and people paint you or draw me, but that was something that my partner at the time had like a massive problem with, and was like, essentially he made me stop doing it, was so controlling, and like, yeah, he really, really, really hated that. So this exhibition, for so many reasons, is liberating. And the fact that I get to be naked during it is really liberating for me. I suppose the difference between healing and liberation would be, well, is anyone ever fully healed and is anyone ever fully liberated? I'm unsure. I feel like I've been healing for a really long time. And maybe healing is like an end goal, or maybe you're always healing, but I feel like I have felt extremely liberated since I left that relationship. And I feel that every single day I'm more myself and I feel more liberated and more free. And especially having like incredibly exciting adventures such as this exhibition, it makes me feel really liberated.
Throughout this process, where do you feel you are right now?
Well, I'm in a really, really, really weird state and place right now because, so it's almost been exactly 2 years since I left this abusive relationship. And I felt like I did so much healing and growing. And then last October, nearly 5 months ago, I went on my first solo trip since I left this partner. And I was violently raped by a stranger. And I cannot believe this happened. I don't necessarily believe in a God, but if there is a God, I'm like, literally, why? Because I felt like I was on this upwards trajectory. But then I also felt like it's propelled me. I mean, obviously, I need so much more therapy and counseling and to work through this significant trauma that's, you know, brought up everything else again. But another part of me is like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I feel like I have nothing left to lose. I want to share every part of myself with anyone who will listen. And I also feel so incredibly grateful to everyone in this community of survivors, because it is something that I haven't been necessarily open about until doing this exhibition, because I wanted to prepare all these thoughts and then share them in an appropriate way with people who want to come and interact with this. You know, it's a difficult topic that you can't just bring up over brunch or a coffee, but people who have experienced these things, it's like this bond, this understanding that no one else can have. And that has brought me so much liberation and joy.
Outside of your art, what else has supported you along the way? You mentioned that you've come into contact with other victim survivors. Has that been a part of that process and the support that you've had during this time?
100%. The best supports throughout my whole life are my best friend, Maxine, who's been there for me essentially every single day of my life, always, and my mom. And obviously, everyone in my life, I love so many people in my life, but I have felt this overwhelming sense of love from women. Like, it's always women. Obviously, I do have some men in my life who I love, but other women who have reached out to me who've experienced domestic violence or sexual assault, who just, I keep using the word understanding, but it's just, I don't know how else to describe it. It's just, they know what to say, what not to say, what to do, just when to put their hand on my shoulder. And I can just feel that we know exactly what each other have been through, despite never being in that room during that really intimate moment where you experience something that you never really want to think about again. But yeah. Support, I'm finding support every day in new avenues, but especially through beautiful, beautiful people and especially through women.
Is there anything that you've learned through that process of support or something that you weren't expecting?
It's sad. It's not necessarily a good thing. I have learned that some people don't know how to respond at all, and sometimes sharing these really traumatic moments, and I don't mean in graphic detail, I mean just gently letting someone know that you're going through a hard time and that something's happened. Some people don't know how to be supportive at all, and I guess you just have to allow people to give what they can. And then it's just made me so much more grateful for those who do have capacity and emotional intelligence and are willing to be there to support me. And also, I suppose I've learned also how to be a better support for other people and how to be more grateful. I think it's made me more grateful and more happy and more aware of all the people in my life who really, really, really love me and how much I really, really, really love them.
So for any listeners who might be going through something similar or, you know, leaving a similar situation, what would you want them to take away from your experience, and where could they find a similar community to connect with, to talk about these things?
I would say that if you need to call someone, you need a hotline call, 1-800-RESPECT. they're definitely going to be there to listen to you. But also, it's really hard because you kind of want to be comfortable. Like, you don't want to approach these topics with someone who might be sensitive. You don't. It's so, I've actually found it as something that I speak about with my friends in terms of we speak about how difficult it is to navigate going through a trauma like this. Because if something happens, like you have a friend who gets really, really sick, or even your dog dies, everybody's going to know because your dog's dead, your dog's gone. But when you're experiencing, or you have experienced and left a situation like with intimate partner violence or sexual assault or rape or abuse, it's something that people aren't going to know about unless you speak up. So I would say speak up to those who are there for you, those people who I'm hoping you have, like, at least one person in your life who loves you, supports you, maybe a family member, maybe a friend. But if you need someone to talk to right now, call 1-800-RESPECT, definitely.
In your performance description, you extend an invitation to people who've experienced abuse, violence, or suicidal thoughts. What do you hope those audiences might gain from engaging with your work?
I have extended that invitation because I want anyone who relates to this situation to feel welcome. I also want to ensure that I think I've been pretty clear just with the title and imagery of this exhibition alone, that it might be a little bit provocative and a little bit uncomfortable. So if anyone's unsure or on edge, then I recommend maybe don't come. But what I really would love for audiences who have experienced abuse or violence or mental health issues to gain from engaging with my work is understanding, connection, relatability. I think especially for those who are comfortable reading my diary, I've felt that having conversations with people where you discuss something that might not be like an everyday dinner table topic, like intrusive thoughts or suicidal ideation, oftentimes those conversations are really eye-opening for me and I've found for others, because it's really just so many things that we're going through or we have experienced are a shared experience. And I think talking about them and sharing them is really important. I wish I had someone who could relate, who I could talk to. What I really hope people take, like, to answer this honestly, which of course is probably the best answer, but what I really hope people take away from this work and this performance and the exhibition is whatever they want. I have worked so hard and tirelessly on this because I want to share as much as I can about myself and my life and my stories and my experiences with anyone who's willing to listen. I think that people who have experienced abuse or violence or suicidal thoughts or mental health issues, they're going to relate on a way that no one else will. So if they're comfortable attending, I think it might bring them a sense of comfort knowing that they're not alone in this world and that a lot of the thoughts and the feelings that they have, that are a lot of them will be expressed in my diary if they're comfortable reading, are really, really commonplace. I think that's the biggest thing, that the way we cope with anything and everything, everyone copes in extremely different ways. But also there are these kind of universal thoughts that we think about ourselves, that we replay these moments, that we think, what could have I done differently? How am I to blame? What have I done wrong? Am I lovable? Is this my fault? Things that you hear again and again and again. I deeply hope that anyone who's experienced abuse or violence or suicidal thoughts or mental health issues finds relatability in these works and finds or sees that the experience that I'm sharing is one that is unfortunately common, and then also takes away the fact that I'm so comfortable but also feeling so grateful that I'm able to share this with other people. So potentially taking away the fact that there is something, I believe, that is truly liberating about sharing these experiences with anyone that will listen. And I hope that any survivor walking into my exhibition will see all the people in the room who love and support not only me, but any other survivor.
If any of our listeners would like to attend the performance, when and where is it happening and how can they get tickets?
It is happening on the 11th of April at 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. at Shopfront 740. It is a Black-led artist-run exhibition space. You can get tickets in my Instagram bio. My Instagram is the word is sorry, like the word sorry, but the O is a zero. So S0RRY on Instagram. I would love to add one more thing, which is that the tickets are only $12, but I also always want to ensure that my art is accessible. So if someone can't afford a ticket, you can just rock up. And free tickets for any Indigenous Australian.
And finally, where can our listeners go to find out more about you and your work?
Once again, on my Instagram, which I think as of last week, I decided that I have to start using social media in order to be an artist in the world. So I just made my account public. So the Instagram handle is the word sorry, but with a zero. So S0RRY on Instagram. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been lovely to talk to you, Amelia.
Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate you. Yeah. Thank you for having me on Broadway.
Yeah, I look forward to checking out the show.
Yay, I'm excited to see you there from my box.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR. Be sure to tune in next week where we will be talking to entrepreneur and author John O'Shea about his experience living with dyslexia and ADHD. Until then, feel free to send us feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wildways.org. Thanks for listening and we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. If any of the things we have talked about today have distressed you, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Listen Well Warm Line on 1300 111 500.